So I'm of two minds for what to do next. We don't have so much time left together. And there's I'm having an internal struggle, so I'm going to actually put it to a vote. We'll do this democratically. It's two options. One is that we can have another period of meditation, and that was my intention, if lunch hadn't gone so long, to actually have another guided meditation now that was shifting more towards appreciation. And we've been focusing, life is both sorrow and joy, and we've been focusing a bit on the sorrow today. So it is nice to also focus on the joy, and I was thinking that we could end with some kind of appreciative joy and equanimity practice.
What does equanimity mean?
And I'll talk about it, regardless of whether we sit with it or not. I will talk about it because it's an important missing piece in this conversation. So a meditation, but if we did a meditation, we would only have like 15 minutes to like discuss it and go afterwards. Or we could have some talk and some small groups. Our hope was to do a meditation, still get you into some small groups and have some larger discussion about it. So the first is a sitting and then a short discussion before we end. The second is a more in-depth discussion about really how to apply this and what are all of the implications of equanimity and appreciation, and some time to discuss it with each other, and to have actually 45 minutes to talk with each other about it rather than 10. But I'm quite open to either way. I think actually it's one of those great decisions because you can't lose. Because if you sit, that'll be good. We don't need to discuss it so much. And if we discuss it and we don't have that, we'll still do a very short meditation, and that'll be really good too, to discuss it. That'd be really beneficial also. So you can't lose, but reflect for a moment on how those choices strike you. And I'm going to put it to a vote, and we're actually going to do whatever the majority wills. So how many people would like to have some more teaching and time to discuss and some more talk in small groups? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. Okay. Well, I think you lose. Depending on how many people don't vote, right?
Second one first.
I did. That was sort of a trick, right? And how many people would like another guided, another sit?
Could you do the sit, but still do a shorter sit, so there's a bit more time for questions and discussion?
Yes. I think that wins, right? Yeah. I think that wins. Yeah. I didn't count them, but I believe that, 20 and then there's 70 people here. So.
Can we take the battery out of the clock for half an hour and do both?
No.
Chinese Buddhists say 10,000 joys, 10,000 sorrows. It's actually much more of a Taoist image than a Buddhist image, right? It's the yin and the yang. It's the perfect balance of there's joy, there's sorrow. Often, without forgiveness, without compassion, without these practices that we're doing, we actually create an incredible imbalance in our lives where it's like 19,000 sorrows and a little bit of joy here and there. So busy chasing joy. And then the joy that we get, we cling to it. And as soon as we cling to it, then it goes into the other category. Oh, nope, turn that joy into sorrow. Not very good at just appreciating joy without clinging to it, letting it come through and learning to enjoy beauty and pleasure and love and all of the pleasant experiences that this heart and mind and body and world offer us. In the Brahma Viharas, the Buddha talks about loving kindness, which includes the forgiveness we've been talking about. Talks about compassion. And then he talks about appreciative joy, opening to joy, which has many connotations. One of them is the opposite of jealousy, appreciating the happiness of others. But also appreciating our own pleasant experiences. And then all of these heart qualities balanced by equanimity. And when it comes to forgiveness, and when it comes to compassion, and when it comes to loving kindness, it's almost a prayer-like practice where we're saying, may you be happy, may you be experiencing forgiveness, may you be filled with loving kindness. And it's almost like you're wishing, right? We're wishing, we're training our hearts through wishing for the well-being and freedom of ourselves and others. In equanimity, the Buddha says, now, okay, remember, let's not get imbalanced here. It's really good for you to wish. Really good practice for you to train your heart and your mind through wishing well wishing each other and sending goodwill and compassion. But don't get imbalanced, is the warning. Part of the warning in equanimity is remember that the happiness or unhappiness of others does not depend on your wishes. And we forget that sometimes, right? The happiness or unhappiness of others does not depend on our wishes. It depends on their actions. And the Buddha says all beings are heirs, inheritors, receiving the consequences of their own actions. It's not how much compassion we have for them, it's how much compassion they have for themselves that counts. It's not how much love we have for others, it's how much love they have that creates their happiness or unhappiness. And we can't, it's the one thing we can never give someone. You can't give someone non-attachment. You can't give someone compassion. You can't give someone the willingness to forgive, no matter how much you wish it for them. And that's where it's almost like the serenity prayer that people use in recovery that says, grant me, how's it go? I'm blank. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, and you could say equanimity, to know the difference. The wisdom, how it's stated, is the wisdom to know what I can and cannot change. And the equanimity is teaching us what we can't change is anyone else. Courage to help, to support, to love. So in this meditation, and you did vote for the meditation, so we will do it. In this meditation, I'm going to be pointing to appreciation and equanimity as part of our practice, as best balancing qualities for the heart after all of this practice with forgiveness and compassion. So settle into a posture to sit. Sensing into our bodies, mindfulness of the body, feel the breath, contact, acknowledging sounds, smells, tastes, what kind of mood, what kind of thoughts. Reflect on the joy you've experienced in this lifetime. You can even go back early in our life. Think about when you were a kid, the good times, the joy and the freedom, and those moments of laughter, of playing. Of feeling accepted and loved. With gratitude to the people that loved us. With appreciation. Breathing into your heart, smiling at the joy that you've experienced in this lifetime. Whether it was true spiritual joy or even just the fun of sex and drugs. All of the pleasure. All of the beautiful things you've seen. Wonderful meals you've had. Sometimes the most joy was in the quiet moments with a friend. When you just felt comfortable enough to not say anything. Yes, we all have our forgiveness to do, our compassion to uncover. We all have also the practice of learning to enjoy, to meet with life, to meet our life's experience with non-attached appreciation. Not clinging, not craving, not trying to reproduce the joys of the past, but simply to let go, to acknowledge, to release. To show up fully for the present time experience. Buddha talks about when wisdom arises, the importance of sustaining that wise reflection without clinging to it, but also not pushing it away. It's okay to savor. The enjoyable parts of our lives. There's enough pain. It's okay to enjoy, to relish, to indulge when it's appropriate. Maybe saying to yourself, may my happiness and my joy, my pleasure, my success, may it increase, may it continue. May I show up fully for the good times, so easy to look out at this world and to see all of the sorrow, the injustices. I invite you to open your heart to the joy in this world as well. How many millions, maybe billions of people are smiling right now, are enjoying themselves. Even just something as simple as the sun shining down in London on Sunday. How many people just around here in the heath, in the parks, over on Primrose Hill, enjoying the view. Sympathetic joy. Appreciative happiness. If life was all suffering, it would just be too much. But it's not. There are all of the reprieves, all of the joys. Opening to all of the joy in the world. Simple pleasures. Both the pleasures of renunciation. It feels so good to let go, to renounce. The joy of being in integrity, of being nonviolent, of being honest, even when it's difficult. The joy of generosity. It feels so good to give without attachment to receiving. May the joy increase for all beings everywhere. May the suffering decrease for all beings everywhere. May we all come into balance to live a life of 10,000 joys, 10,000 sorrows, meeting them all with the appropriate response. Sorrow calls for compassion. Joy calls for non-attached appreciation. May we hold the joys and sorrows in equanimity. Understanding. All beings have their own karma, are heirs to their own karma. Our wishes will not create joy, will not create sorrow. Only our actions. May we not suffer about our inability to control others. May we have the equanimity to understand. Everyone must do the work for themselves. And may we be here to support them. when they're ready, when they're willing, when they're interested. Feeling your breath, your body, heart and mind here, present. It's exactly like forgiveness. It's exactly like compassion. It's also another place where part of what the Buddha is saying is that at enlightenment, all of the jealousy and comparing and envy that is the norm for human beings falls away, and what is left is appreciative joy. That this is an enlightened quality of heart. That if you see deeply into the nature of mind and heart and being and impermanence and not self, right? All of these insights that happen. Part of what remains is compassion, kindness, appreciation, equanimity. We're not enlightened. We suffer from jealousy. We have a mind that compares, that judges, that feels threatened by the happiness of others. It's not your fault. Is a huge and important place to start. What you're experiencing is normal. It's not just neurotic, it's normal. It's normal neurosis. So that in itself helps me a lot to just normalize it and just be like, oh, this is just part of, this isn't me, this is just what the mind does. Every single person in here has experienced what you're saying. That feeling of feeling threatened, feeling jealous, feeling envious by someone else's success. Everyone. It's built in. It's, again, back to our survival instinct. Craving, needing, security. And the practice. I know you're new to practice. You just found the Dharma. The Dharma is going to radically change your relationship to your mind. And there will come a time where that feeling of jealousy or of non-charitable, non-appreciation will arise, and you won't take it personal anymore. And you'll be like, oh, okay, that old story. The practice will help. Doing these kind of practices of training your mind, of saying, may your success continue, works. Right? That's the bottom line of everything that I sit up here for 8 hours and tell you, hey, Buddhism works. It really works. It really works. And so you found it, trust it, follow it, cultivate it, be disciplined about it. Don't believe your mind that's going to say, you know, you'll find happiness in the material world. That's always a lie. And realize that everything that you need, that all of us need, is here. It's in us. We just need the techniques to uncover it. Because that quality of heart will be revealed to us when we uncover it. And so here we are. We have the techniques. We're good. We're all sorted now. Now it's just about doing the work. Right? Here you've come. You've got your toolbox. Many of you have had this toolbox for decades. And then we know it's just about applying the tools, using them, practicing, getting the ass on the cushion, getting our bodies on retreat, keeping our mouth closed when that's the appropriate action, being generous when that's the appropriate action. It's really a rare and precious thing to... the Buddha at one point used the analogy, I forget exactly how it goes, he said, being born as a human being that hears the Dharma and responds and applies it is as rare as if there were one old blind sea turtle in all of the seas, and he only comes to the surface once every mahakalpa. And a mahakalpa is how long it takes for a bird to fly over the Himalayas with a silk scarf in its mouth and wear away, K2. So that's one mahakalpa. Is as rare as that blind old sea turtle to rise in where there's a wooden hoop. There's like a circle of wood floating on one of the seven seas, and the blind sea turtle rises in the center of that. Really rare. Really rare, really precious. I've been playing with, lately and in the new book, I go on this sort of thing about, the Buddha said only a handful of people in each generation would be willing to do this radical work, to train their hearts, to go against the tendency towards jealousy and to become appreciative, to become generous, to be forgiving. He said, only a handful. He said, this isn't like the masses aren't going to do this. The masses are asleep. This is rare. This is radical. This is like for discontents and punks and hippies and revolutionaries. I've been thinking, I've looked up to bikers. That sort of outlaw, biker. Those guys are outside. I like outsiders. And I was thinking about how how many of you seen the old Marlon Brando film, The Wild Ones? So that was this riot. It was a real riot that took place in California in Hollister. And after the riot, this is kind of biker riots, and it's kind of like Quadrophenia. It's like the American Quadrophenia, right? Kind of the rockers and the mods. And after the riot, some well-meaning journalist said, in defense of motorcycle enthusiasts, he said, you know, 99% of people that ride motorcycles are good people. It's just the 1% that give bikers a bad name. And then, of course, all the outlaws were like, yeah, we're the 1%. Look out. I kind of think that that's what the Buddha meant by a handful in each generation with little dust in their eyes. That he's talking about, you know, 99% of people are going to stay asleep. Not their fault. There's no judgment. Just seems to be the way it is with 6.8 billion people in the world now, humans? 6.8, I think, billion? 1%? Not bad. Is that 68 million? I think one of yeah, I think 68 million. Not bad. If there were 68 million Buddhas. I don't know why I'm going on this tear, but I like it. Here we are, you know, 75, 80 people, however many of us, a small percentage of the people in the neighborhood, of the people in the city. And of course, there's also thousands more people who are wise, are compassionate, are forgiving. I'm not at all saying that Buddhism is the only way to be wise and compassionate. But I am proposing that we accept that we are in a rare and precious incarnation. And that we are a small percentage of people who are really going to be kind and compassionate. This is also fits in with the equanimity. We're not going to save everybody. We really inspire people. We'll really support and encourage those who are interested, those who are willing. But you are one percenters. One percenters of kindness, of compassion, of generosity. And that doesn't have to be depressing. That can be completely accepting. Just, it's the way it is in this world. Thinking about Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi, maybe 1% is enough to make really radical, positive shifts. And we don't have to wait for peace on earth. And we can say, okay, we are a committed, small force of love, of kindness, of generosity, of compassion. Maybe together we can create some serious positive changes. Okay, I went over time. Last thing, I want to turn it over. I know that there's some announcements. Almost. I actually want to talk about Donna before I turn it over. I know they're used to talking about Donna. But I have some thoughts about it that I'd like to share with you. Dana is the Buddhist term for generosity. I hope you think of it as a practice, as important as your meditation practice. Donating, generosity, giving is a way of practicing, a way, it's an antidote to our selfishness and our clinging. I really deeply like to encourage you to not think about donating to teachers like myself and Vinny or any other teachers as a fee for service. It's not the same paradigm. This is not an exchange of how much you liked the teachings. It's not a fee for service. It's much more of a practice of the purification of our heart through giving and maybe of how much we love the Dharma. And how much we want it to spread. I like to always think about when I'm donating to a teacher that they're here teaching me because someone else was generous to them. I'm benefiting from someone else's generosity. I'm not paying them for the teachings that day. They're giving me teachings for free. I'm here, Vinny, we were here teaching for free because someone else gave us the funds and the support to be able to come and be here. And that the donations that we give then, that you give to us, are allowing us to go on and teach to the next group. That it's really a pay it forward type of model rather than pay for what you have received. No, you're giving those teachings to the next group, right? A few weeks ago, Martine Batchelor was here and you gave her some money and then she got to go and teach somewhere else. This time, I'm here, and Vinny, and we get to go. Vinny's teaching in the Netherlands next week. By the way, if you want to go on retreat with Vinny, there's still room in his 8-day Vipassana retreat in, actually, I think maybe it's in Belgium. Same difference, right? Maybe it's in the Netherlands. I don't know. I go home and what am I doing next? I'm teaching a 10-day Vipassana retreat with Jack Kornfield in 2 weeks in the desert and Yucca Valley and with my teacher and a whole bunch. And so your generosity is going to get me home, get me to go teach that group. Their generosity will send me to the next retreat. It's much nicer to think of it that way, I think. You're giving it to the next group rather than what you've received. Generosity, the merit of it, does not depend on what you give. It depends on the heart quality with what you, with how you offer. It's not the amount. For some people, your ability, maybe 100 pounds is what's appropriate for you. Some people, 10 pounds, that's like a very generous offering for you. And so you have to play with it yourself and see what for me is appropriate. What for me is in my budget, in my heartfelt offering, rather than giving more means, it doesn't mean more. Some people, there is a such thing as giving too much. And it's happened. People come, they get so inspired, and they say, you know, I'm going to give $1,000. And then they leave and they say, I can't pay rent. That was too much. I felt so inspired and I gave too much. I hurt myself. That wasn't compassionate. So use it as practice. If you had a handful of money and you had time, I would encourage you to take a handful of bills and to go to the donation basket and, you know, put in 5 and 10 and pause. How's that feel, 10 and 15 and 20? And how's that feel? Really sensing in mindfulness in your body. And you get to whatever you get to, for you get to 50, and you say, you know, that doesn't feel good. That feels like too much. Let me take 10 back. Really, as a practice like that, that you're using it as your experience of giving, rather than what you think you should give or any of that, just what feels right to you. I've really enjoyed being here. I hope to come back. I'm glad that you enjoyed Vinny as well. And if you're in Los Angeles, come visit me. I've got a couple of meditation centers and there in Los Angeles. And I'm around the States a lot teaching. If you're in the Bay Area, come visit Vinny in San Francisco and Oakland. And hope that our paths cross again soon. Now, all yours.
Well, mainly just like to say thank you so much. And I mean, I'm not going to attempt to sum up the slightest part of what you and Vinny have offered this weekend. So just really want to say thank you. Shame Vinny isn't here, so thank you to both of you.